this week's parasha, we have the Yaakov Avinu gathers his children together before he passes away, and he basically gives them, he plans to give them a direction in life. In one sense, he's telling them in the future, Rashi says, but that didn't work out. The Russian did not allow him to give them that clarity. But at least he gave each person their direction in life, how we saw what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, etc. So this is one place where you find this idea that a person, before he passes away, we would like him to give direction, and so he gives direction to his family. So we'll call it a tzavah, an ethical will, a tzavah ruchanis. I brought in, there are multiple publications which quote many ethical wills which exist, at least from the Jewish end. One of them is from the Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael was a relatively famous commentary on the Mishnayos, and was known as quite a broad-based individual who had his mouth of secular knowledge, etc. He, before he passed away, he wrote a tzavah, an ethical will for his family. It's quite fascinating to read how firm he was. how he says, "I want you to be careful." He gives an introduction. And every mitzvah, the rice of the bone, and any minig of Yisrael, do not even move like a cherukah, like any a hair's breadth. Move away from any minig of Yisrael, even a hair's breadth. That's one thing that he writes. Then he continues and he says that if any individual ever asks, I give you a command. If any person ever asks you for help, any type of favor, even if it's an enemy, even if it's a non-Jewish person in the middle of the street, you do not refuse the request. Do as much as you can. If you can't do the whole thing, do part of it. If you can't do anything, you try and at least appease them, but not at that point. Do not get involved in any type of machlokas, any type of disagreement, even in something which is who's going to be the rab, who's going to be the shaykhit. I want you to maintain peace, brotherly love amongst you. Therefore, I give you a command that every Rosh Chodesh Nissan and every Rosh Chodesh Elul every person has to send a letter to the other ones and wish them a good Yom Tov. You have to send each other letters for each other's birthdays. And he lists all of the birthdays of all of the members of the family. If anybody has a simcha, so the person has to send each other a letter informing everybody that it took place, and then they have to send back, everybody has to send back a letter of mazel tov. But the family should keep itself together. I don't know how far they were from each other. Then he talks about the person goes to daven every day. And then he gets to a point where he says, I'm going to give you a list of things, and if you don't do these things, where you go over my tzivui, I want you to know, I do not want you to know it as my child. You should not be referring to as bas pleni, bein miksav, bein balpeh, whether written or somebody says, oh, you're the son of so-and-so. No, you're not. You're not my son, not my child anymore if you do these things. Don't call me Avi, don't call me Chami, my mother-in-law, I don't want that. Do not name any of your children after me. Do not come to visit me to my kever. Do not come within the Dalai Lama's of my kever. And this will apply to my grandchildren as well. Okay. So what's his list of these things? It gets pretty intense. I do not want you to allow your non-Jewish servants to buy anything for you do any business for you on Shabbos. I do not want you to eat drink any milk which was not Cholav Yisrael, a Jew was present there at the time. Do not eat any cheese which is green as akum. Then he says, if to the women he says, you should not go even the mixas saris reshechem magulas, even if a little bit of your hair is uncovered. He says, you're done. A person who shaves with a razor, done, not interested. The only way you can come back in is if you make a shmur in front of two witnesses. That you no longer ever do this again, and then you can be considered part of my family again. Now, this is the Tiferes Yisrael, like the Medanish of Tiferes Yisrael. They called him like this modern. This is pretty intense. This is like Litva. Where
when did he live?
When did he live? He was nifter at the end of the 19th century. So, And then he says a person erev Shabbos should not eat a large meal, should be able to enter the Shabbos hungry, so you'll enjoy the meal, the Shabbos meal. Before you go take your shower, make sure that the table is set and erev Shabbos. You should never have kaas, gaiva.
This is one of the things also that you'd have to
You should never walk around with a scowl on your face. You should always greet people with a bright face, a bright countenance. But even so, you understand, there's certain people that's not necessarily the crowd that you should hang out with, etc., etc. I want you to learn every single day, in the first year at least, something for my safer, etc. So I found it fascinating the intensity of the tzivui. He's giving that tzivui. Okay, let's move into the area of a legal will. So we have the Torah delineates an order of inheritance, what each person is supposed to receive. The Torah is very clear about it, etc. We spoke about last year, Parshas Vayeshev. Is it proper to change? Can a person give preference to one child over the other child? And we found that the Chachamim actually discourage that. They do not want you giving preference to one child over another child, etc. The Torah says clearly you cannot take away the double inheritance that a firstborn is supposed to get, that you cannot take away. You cannot take any of the children which are born later and give them the same status as the firstborn.
Where's this written in the Torah?
This is found in two places. It's the beginning of Parshat Kisei. You cannot give preference to a later child over which you happen to like better over the
before. That's different than the double portion.
What?
That's preference.
They're talking about the double portion. The source of not giving any preference is actually the story of Yosef. That Yosef by Yaakov giving a preference to Yosef, it created this whole family dynamic which was not healthy. So the Mor says in Shabbos in the first parak, to never give a preference to one child over the other children, because that will look at the results.
But is it, aside from the Bechor?
Well, the Bechor, the Torah says you're not doing it. The Bechor says,
right?
That's a preference for inheritance, not a preference for anything else.
Right. Now the Gemara discusses. In the Gemara and Boavasha discusses, there's a separate issue of taking inheritance away from the family and giving it to somebody who's not part of the family at all. That's a separate issue. That's in the Gemara first, Avuri Achsanta, which the Gemara says you cannot do. So if a person wants to come along and he wants to give directives what's supposed to happen with his property. So let's, we're not going to have time to cover everything. As usual, but a few things. So, if a person wants to take part of his estate and leave it to charity, so the more actually discourages that. The more says the more discusses taking your item and giving it away to Hektish, to the Beis Hamikdash. The more says it's not proper to take it away from your children, even to give it to the Hektish. That being said, there is a. Chabad Chaim talks about this. The Shulchan Aruch Rav talks about this idea of a person who says, that's very nice, but I am concerned about what is going to be my status of myself after I pass away in the world to come, and I want to make sure that part of my money is given over to Stalka. So he's doing it not to take away from the children, he's doing it to protect himself, to help himself. So it says, since he's doing it for the Tavis Atzma, as long as he leaves a significant amount for the children, he can do that. So, number one. Number two, the Geshe Chaim adds another twist. We find accounts of a person who stole something, and he's not sure who he stole from. He stole from the community, etc. He's not sure. He should do something for the community, and this way it'll give benefit to the community. Some benefit will accrue back to the individuals that he's stolen from. So a person has that situation, which it's hard to say that we're not always, you know, maybe at some point I've taken advantage of something which I didn't have a right to. You know, if you want to get really, really, you know, involved in that. So he says that my goal over there is, again, I need to address my needs. So again, that would be his argument that a person could do that. Okay. Beyond that, the idea of dividing, we said, really, we would prefer that they should follow the rules of the Torah, how to divide. But if a person doesn't want, sometimes says, you know, I want to address specific items. I feel if I give a directive, who should get what, that'll be remove the potential for any type of disagreement amongst the children. So that's, you know, hopefully that's true. Sometimes you should give it good thought. If it's something that's extremely valuable, you might be better off giving a directive beforehand. You might be better off not giving a directive beforehand, depending on how you decide that. But assuming that you've come to that decision, so you have a few options. So the first option is that a person could give him a matana. I can give, as long as I'm alive, I can give away my items any way I see fit. I can give them away. But you need to do some type of an active kinyan. You actually have to acquire it. It's not just enough to say it. There's one exception: a person is on his deathbed. But that's the general case. A person's writing a will. He's not in that situation. So a person's writing the will. Just saying it alone would not be sufficient. A person writes in the will that he's writing this because he wants this to, because he's concerned he's going to pass away soon, etc. If he writes that's why he's doing it, that's called Tzava Machmas Misa. And the Mordechai says a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. It's a mitzvah on the children to fulfill the father's wishes. So it's not a kinyan of its own. It's not automatically given. But so if a kinyan wasn't done, the fact that he wrote it, it would be incumbent upon the children to respect the wishes of the father. That's only true if it writes the language of that in the language of the will, like he said, I'm mitzava you, I'm commanding you, or due to the fact that I'm passing away, I want this to take place. She's mitzava machlas misa. But barring that scenario, so a person would have to do a kinyan with each individual for any items that he wants to give away. So that's if you're talking about a specific item. Let's say you're talking about you want to change the portion, the amount, and he should get X amount of your property. That will work, and you'll do a kinyan with him that only works for the property that you own at the time that you make the arrangement. It doesn't work for any property you're going to get in the future. So whatever, if a person right now owns $1 million in assets and he wants the division to be, he should get a third as opposed to a quarter, whatever the number is, he does a kinyan, he'll get a third of that $1 million. Meanwhile, before he passed away, he acquired another $5 million. He doesn't have any rights, special rights, those extra $5 million. He has no special rights in that.
Does that apply to the appreciation of assets? Like, you know, it's the same object, but it's just worth a lot more money now.
If he gave a specific item, so then it would, would the fact that it appreciated would not make a difference. If he just gave a general statement, you're getting a right to get a third of the property, it would not the value going up. Anything which he actually owned at that point in time, he got a kinyan in. The fact that the value went up wouldn't affect it, wouldn't diminish his rights to it. But anything which he acquired afterwards, it wouldn't work for him. Okay, so this is a limited type of an approach, because a person's writing it, he might live another 10 years, 20 years, and what's going to happen with keeping track of which property was there then, which property came later, is confusing. So there is an approach which they developed at the time of the early Akronim, addressing the giving an inheritance. Person wanted to give an inheritance to his daughters. The Torah does not give inheritance to the daughters. The daughters have rights for support, etc. They don't get actual inheritance. And they came up with a way to, if a person wants to give inheritance to the daughters, what is a way to do it? Now the custom then was they would give a daughter a half of a portion of a son. That was so the vehicle was referred to as shtar chatzi zocher. A shtar to give her half of the rights of a male. And you could do shtar kula zocher, which is what nowadays many people do. They give all of the children, they give equal portions. So you can do, but the logic behind it is the same. If you don't do this, and you don't have a valid tzavua, a person wants to say, well, but I have a legal will. Is that binding in any way, shape, or form? So based on the fact that the American government will support it. In other words, dinam achusa dinam. Can we apply the rule of dinam achusa dinam to solve the problem without getting involved in any fancy types of stories? Most places can hold that we cannot. There's a Rashba which was asked this question. He says, since the Torah gives a very specific delineation of how to divide a Pirusha, dinam achusa dinam will not override that. So you cannot use dinam achusa dinam to override that. And therefore, if that's true, if when the father passes away and he leaves a son and a daughter, and the father left, the division should be 50-50 between the two children. Say if the son willingly gives that portion to his sister, that's not a problem. It all belongs to him, and he gives it to her willingly. But if he refuses and they would go to court, and court would enforce the will, so the daughter is considered a Goslin. She has everything she has. Does not belong to her. It's Gazela. Or let's say that the boy is a Katan. He has no power to be Moichel until he becomes a Gadol. So even if he's agreeable, it has no status being agreeable. So the daughter would take the property, it would be considered Gzela. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense to try and use this other vehicle to do that. So how do they do it? What do they do? They came up with the following thought process. So there is a concept in halacha called Moichel that a person can admit. That and we accept if I admit I owe somebody money, I say, you know, I borrowed $1,000, you, I owe you $1,000. So that's valid in halacha. That's valid in halacha. The Mor says, let's say we know that you don't really owe $1,000, but I go in front of the two witnesses or go in front of the best and I say I owe $1,000, and I make an admission. So Mor says that also works. That's a concept called kinyan udisa. I can make somebody own something through the process of admission. Even when we know that it's not true. The Mora suggests this, the Mora has a scenario where the Mora suggests this is a case of a person who was a ger, and he had lived with a Jewish woman, they had a child, and then he became a ger. So luckily that he there's not really a connection between the two, but really he raised the child as his son. The problem is when he dies, I mean, he had no other children, so the rule is property of a ger when he dies becomes hefker. So he wanted to make sure that his son would get this biological son, who wasn't his halachic son, should get the property. And the solution was, he wanted to kinyan udisa. So the Mor said, that's what the Mor presents this concept. He says, I mean, moiter that all these things belong to my son. Well, they belong to the son. They belong to the son. He admitted it. Right? So nobody can take it. So that's kinyan udisa. So I can do kinyan udisa on ownership. I can also do kinyan udisa on a chayv. So if I write, I owe somebody $10 million, I owe him $10 million. It's enforceable in court. And Allah, in Bezin, that's enforceable.
In the case of the Gemara, we knew for sure that it wasn't the sons?
The worst case was Isser Giura and Ramar Baruchel.
We knew for sure, there was no question, that it didn't actually belong to the sons.
Right. That's the worst, that's called Kinyan Adisa. So it's the more Barbasa Kufman test. So, so we have this fascinating idea. So I said, let's use this to our advantage. Let's use this to the advantage, and let's say, let's go to one of the people who you would like to receive part of the Yerusha, and write up a document saying that, you know, or a shtar with signed by witnesses that you are admitting that you owe this person a large sum of money way beyond all of your assets. So now you owe this daughter that you want her to get portion. You write, you owe her $10 million. Your assets are $5 million. Right? So there's no question. I mean, you don't really expect to get to win the lottery. And, you know, you feel confident by the time the person passes away that the amount of the admission of the this indebtedness will be greater than his whole estate put together. Now we go to when you add a condition and you say, if the members of the family adhere to the delineation of how you want, you wrote up in the will, you would like to divide the assets, this indebtedness is null and void. If they do not adhere to what it says in the shtar, then this indebtedness is valid, and she could come collect as a balchayv from all of the property that the brother would get. So she gets either because they agreed to it and they don't have to go through the whole process of collecting, or because there's an indebtedness over here which is valid in halacha and she has a right to get the property. So either she would be guaranteed to get her property. If you have multiple daughters, you would do this with each one of the daughters in such a type of an arrangement. So that's this is an idea introduced by the early Ephraim. There's a sefer Nachashiva. Nachashiva is 300 years ago, and he was we have the sefer which lists all the different types of shtaras, documents that they used to use, the ksuv, etc. He lists the shtar chatzizah already in his time, and he would you know, list them, and he would have notes on how to write, make sure you write it properly, etc. And so all the details.
You have to write a separate one for each child,
right? So each person that you want. I mean, theoretically, you could do it to one, and once you say everybody has to adhere to, I could do it. There's some places I can do it to somebody who's not part of the group, and I said, "Listen, I'm committing myself to owe to executor X, who's not part of the inheritance. And he'll get everything unless you guys agree to X." You could do it that way also, but there's some issues with, you know, there's actually a machlokes, it's better to do somebody outside of the group or inside the group. You know, you're giving inheritance.
How do you make a condition, though? If it's an admission that you, if the kinyan is by admitting I owe the money, how can you
like
say
any, I can make it. I'm saying I admit I owe this person X on condition that Y is true. It's like any tanai. How do you make tanai?
I'm just not understanding what admission means. This is not a factual type of thing.
It's a kinyan.
It's true.
It's a kinyan.
Okay, it's a new matan. Or it's like
it gets a law, but it has the power of a kinyan. Yeah. Through admitting, you now own something. I can make making conditions on your ownership.
So you can really use any kinyan for them. But
you can't use any kinyan, you know, on a choiv. I can't pick up the indebtedness. There's no indebtedness.
Handshake or help.
No, right.
So would this work for objects he does not have yet?
Yes, because what you're doing is you're not being mocked of the property to them. You're being mocked of this choiv to them, which is when he passes away, there's this debt, and they owe the debt, so they have to address the debt. And there's a way to not have to address the debt. So that's all you have to do. Right? So that is now. So you would write your regular will, legal will, with you know, consult it with what's considered proper division according to what you know we would suggest, knowing the children, etc., with consultation with a lawyer, with a rub. Now you have your. Then you would write this, which basically forces them to enforce the will. That's what that in a way which, and if they don't, the other person really has a lot of rights to it. So you're not, there's no gzeila involved in it. So they're guaranteed to get have whatever they take, they're taking in a way which is proper. Okay, so that is, they suggest a way to do it, and that's really the best way of doing it. Okay, let's hold it here.